thought for today. Sowing seeds of intuitive awareness reaps an eternal harvest. Sowing seeds of intuitive awareness reaps eternal harvest. Sowing seeds of intuitive awareness reaps an eternal harvest. If I have to think and dig and wonder what I'm going to say, though I might say things that are interesting, I lose my audience. If I'm going to pause between each phrase and cogitate between each phrase, my talk is sort of uninteresting. For you to catch up or remember what I said before my pause makes it very difficult for you to listen to a talk. We have on our internet program streaming, not screaming, but streaming. And it's a streaming flow of talks that I give, and perhaps that you will give as soon as we get them all on there. And they're just lovely talks, and they're flowing, and they're harmonious, and they're joyful. But if I were to stop and think, well, let's see, what should I say next? How should I express myself? You'd soon turn it off, wouldn't you? You would become very disenchanted with the presentation. When you're giving a talk, flow with it. You know what you're going to say. Every time Anita picks up her notes, she takes 5 minutes to read over her notes and think, she knows what she's going to say. She knows what she's going to express to us and how dynamic she's going to talk. She doesn't need her notes. She can use them, but she doesn't need them. When Anita lets loose, the torrent comes out and the wonderful magic of her ideas flow forth. And the same with Ellen. When Ellen is talking to people in Guyana, I say, Ellen, tell us about being a monk. Well, being a monk is a wonderful thing. I think that being a monk is fantastic, which gives me a chance to express. She's like a speeding car racing down the street, having so much to say in a short time. Going, flowing, showing, knowing. Fantastic. Be aware. Sowing seeds of intuitive awareness reaps an eternal harvest. Each one of us, we each have an opportunity to sow seeds. We each have an opportunity to tell our story. We each have an opportunity to show the world what we're made of. And I guarantee you, what you tell the world that someone else has said is garbage. If you're going to say that you read in this book and it said this, if you're going to say that the philosophy of Herb Bierley is this or this or that, you're garbage, pure garbage. Say what you feel intuitively within yourself. What has brought you to this point in your life is not one book, not 100 books, but your intuitive self. You are ready to be fantastic. You are ready to be fulfilled. You are ready to be revealed. And inside of you is this great library. The library of books, the library of ideas, the library of thoughts, the library of intuition. And that library is just bubbling over with ideas waiting to be expressed. And all you have to do, if you wish to, is tune in to it. Now you say, well, what am I supposed to do when I'm in my meditation? What am I supposed to think about when I'm in my introspection? What am I supposed to think about? My goodness sakes. You have so much material inside of your intuitive consciousness that in a lifetime or 100 lifetimes, you'll never have a chance to think of it all. And don't think the same thing over and over again. Think of new things. Think sparkling new things, sparkling new ideas. How are you going to approach a given problem? Don't take the old hackneyed way of thinking about it. Think something new. Listen within and say to yourself, that's a different approach. Yes, that's a good idea. I think I'll do that. It's probably your fifth, sixth, or 700th thought from what you were starting to think about, but it's a good start. You want to think your first thought. You want to take your first thought. You want to flow with it. But you can't flow with it if you're going to start reading somebody else's works, reading somebody else's books. I don't say you shouldn't read. I'm just saying, when you're talking, when you're sharing, when you're meditating, when you're being yourself, listen to your own inner voice. Listen to your own intuitive self. The intuitive self, you say, John is so wonderful. John can tell such nice stories. John is so creative. John is so this and that. John's garbage. I have no respect for John. Because John is in kindergarten. If you think he's good, you have no idea what he really can do. He is fantastic, but he's not expressing it. He's just expressing the grade school level of his genius. You say, well, boy, if that's the grade school level of his genius, I wouldn't mind being in his grade school. Well, you are. When you admire him, you're in his grade school. When you take what he shares with you and you jump to another level of your own understanding, super. But when you just say, oh, you're so wonderful, I wish I were half as good as you. Oh my goodness. You have something to present that John could never think of presenting, and that's you. That's your own inner sparkle, your own inner genius. And you've got to train yourself to listen to that inner genius. And when you listen to the inner genius, then act upon it. And not act upon it at the 500th thought, but as the first thought. This is a wonderful project to work on that will bring magic and miracles into your life if you will let it, but it'll also bring heartache into your life if you don't let it. Because then you're going to go around saying, oh, Sylvia, she is so brilliant. She can do everything. Sylvia has so much talent. Sylvia is so wonderful. Oh, John, he's such a genius. Oh, Ellen, she can do everything, you know. Oh, Ingeborg, she's got so many talents. She is just so peaceful. She's so at peace with herself. And Anita, oh my goodness, what she can do. You see, comparison destroys you. It doesn't uplift you. It destroys you. Because you think they can do something you can't do. And that's not true. They do things that you couldn't appreciate it if you couldn't do it. If you weren't totally capable of doing anything anybody else does, you couldn't appreciate it. Why don't you watch the magician on TV all the time? Because it doesn't interest you. It's something you do every day. It's true. Why don't you watch the politicians and their magic? They say one thing and do another thing. They're fantastic, you know. Well, you do that all the time too. Why don't you watch the doctors and see how they bury their patients? You know? Who died? The patient died because it wants to die. The patient could have lived if it wanted to live. Why does a patient go to a doctor who says, you're terminal? Why doesn't a patient go to a doctor who says, let's work on this, let's put a new cause in motion, let's give you all the things that are chemically good for you, all the things that are emotionally good for you, all the things that are fantastically good for you, and let's go for it. Now look, Anita, you come in here and you said you want to be whole and perfect. All right, Anita, here's what you do. You get rid of those old thoughts you have that told you that you're not good. You get rid of them. Just Tell them they're no longer welcome in your mind. You understand? You get rid of those thoughts. If you're coming to me, I'm your positive doctor. I say you can experience anything you want to experience, which every doctor says. And what do you want to experience? Well, I want to be whole and perfect. Well, then stop saying to the world that you're not whole and perfect. Stop looking to the world like you're not whole and perfect. Get your chin up, your chest out, your shoulders back. Act like you're a live human being. Get excited about life. And then you're sowing seeds of intuitive awareness and you reap an eternal harvest. Are you ready to sow your seeds of intuitive awareness and reap an eternal harvest? Are you ready for that? No, you aren't. You aren't. Because you choose to go to a doctor who says that you have a terminal condition. You choose to go to a doctor who says these things about yourself. You choose that. The doctor didn't choose that. You chose that. You chose the specific doctor that says, okay, you're died. You're died. You're dying. You're dead. Why is it? Some people go to the alternative doctors. Now, you don't hear too much about the results of the alternative doctors. You don't hear how many of their patients die. You don't hear how many of their patients live. You don't hear how many of their patients have terminal diseases. You don't hear how many of their patients are doing anything. Why? And I assure you, there are more alternative doctors than there are medical doctors, really. And these alternative doctors are like you and me, like every human being on the face of the earth. You have the chance of saying, I have pneumonia and I'm going to die. That's old stuff. People used to die of pneumonia. And if you want to die of pneumonia today, you really got to do some dying. You really got to put some new seeds in motion because they've conquered these things. They don't exist anymore. And if you want them, you really have to do some creating. Really. And we do. We do. Now, what kind of intuitive seeds would you like to plant in your life? And we're each different. Would you like to plant the intuitive seeds in your life that you live a harmonious life? That you are abundant? That you live in your eternally perfect spirit, mind, and body? Would you like to plant intuitive seeds in your life that you are a charming, delightful, desirable person, that everyone who meets you feels that you are just so cool that they'd like to be in your presence? I have this problem. Wherever I go and speak to people, they all want to come be with me on campus. They all want to come live here. They all want to come and be a part of our program. And I say, fine. If you want to be a novitiate, it's $1,000 a month during your novitiate year to try it out to see if you like it. $1,000 a month? Well, hell, what do you think this is? We're giving it away? Well, monasteries are supposed to just, you know, not charge anybody anything. Yeah, that's what monasteries are. And if you want that monastery, go to the Catholic monastery. They have that program. I've not checked into the Catholic monastery, but I imagine they want everything you have. They want you to donate everything you have the minute you walk in the door, which is smart. We don't do that. We say, while you're a novitiate, we take all your money, and we put it in a special account for you. We don't touch it. And you don't touch it. Because while you're a novitiate, you're training to be a monk. And a monk has no personal money. A monk has no personal property. A monk has nothing that belongs to them. The clothes on their back they brought with them, but as long as they're a novitiate, it doesn't belong to them. Nothing in their possession belongs to them. If a novitiate leaves before or after at the termination of their year, everything they had goes to them. If a novitiate stays and becomes a monk, then everything they have goes to the monastery. Everything. And they, in turn, live, work, and train at the monastery in their spiritual work and on their spiritual path. But they have a tendency to still feel that the things are theirs. And so what we probably should do is take everything that was their personal possession and throw it out, so that they have nothing there that still belonged to them at some time, and reclothe them and refit them with whatever, but throw it out. Sell it, dispose of it, give it away. Because they always feel this way. And when they feel this way, they got problems. Sylvia has a big problem that way. Sylvia thinks that she should still maintain the style of dressing that she did before she had her surgery. And that's a silly thing to do. Sylvia should have her surgery and feel that she is now a new woman, and she's going to put forth a new image of herself, and she's going to get rid of the old bags that she wore before. Sylvia wore things that did not display her feminine beauty, did not display the magnificence of who she was. And she's still doing the same thing. And this is like a person who goes in for cosmetic surgery, and they have their face completely redone. Before, they had scars and burns all over their face from the fire that they went through or something, and now they look just like Marilyn Monroe, you know, lovely, lovely. But they're always holding their hands before their face because, you know, they don't want people to see them, because mentally they still have all the scars, because the scars were so tragic. And as soon as the psychological attitude can change, where they knew and know that they have a beautiful exterior, that they look glorious, and they do that by first cleaning up their interior psychological self with a new attitude about themselves, wow, they just sparkle, and they just look like a glorious rose. So Sylvia says, well, I got to have time to heal. No, you don't. The healing and the new image of yourself are coming along with the same nature together. You see, listen to your intuitive self. Listen to your intuitive self. Sylvia, when you were 19, what sort of an attitude did you have about life? What sort of dresses did you wear? Did you wear sacks? No. You wore lovely, curvaceous dresses that showed off your beautiful figure, didn't you? Now, hey, tell me I'm wrong. Sylvia, tell me I'm wrong. Did you wear sacks when you were 19?
I always wore loose clothes,
Sylvia. Ah, no wonder you wanted to give yourself room to expand. Okay, enough said. How then can Sylvia ever be the glorious creature she is if she's going to always hide it under a sack, as she says, loose clothing? Anita, is your clothing fairly loose?
Comfortable, yes.
It's comfortable. It fits your body, but it's loose. It doesn't squish you in any place or squish you out any place. It just is comfortable. And how do you look? Yeah, glorious. Ellen, how do you dress? Sometimes you dress in sacks too. But why do you dress in sacks? Why do you do that to yourself? What sort of intuitive awareness are you sparkling forth by that? In other words, every one of us should be so proud of the temple of the living spirit in which we live that we display it beautifully, charmingly at all times, and that we have clothing that complements what we are, that complements our body. Now, do any of you ever go to the hairdresser to have him hide your face or hide your body or hide your hair? You go to the hairdresser to have him or her give you the most beautiful coiffure that you can have, don't you? You want to complement the shape of your face. If you're an egg-shaped face, or if you're a circle-shaped face, or whatever kind of faces you have, you want to compliment them. Now, we're going to sow seeds of intuitive awareness. And these seeds of intuitive awareness are listening to our divine self, not hiding it. listening to our divine self, letting it out, letting it shine forth, letting it bloom, letting it grow, letting it express itself and expand to the magnificence that it is. I've seen a lot of tall people in my life who lived with a lot of short people. And they were constantly bending over and sort of dropping themselves down on their spine, trying to be smaller like the small people that they're with. And they can't make it. They look atrocious. They look sort of like they're bent over or sick or that they have some palsy or something. No. Why, sir, ma'ams, why does a small person like to be with a tall person? Because it makes them feel better. Now, if they're with other small people, there's no comparison. So, little people just love to be with tall people. Little children, they love to be with adults. Why do they love to be with adults? Because that's their aspiration, that's their inspiration, that's their intuitive awareness of who they are. And they rise to it. Why do they say that when a man and a woman live together for many years, they look alike? They begin taking on the outer looks of each other. Why is that? Both physically, as a human body, and as a face, and attitudes. They begin to look like each other because you're known by that which you associate with. What is it we want to associate with? John, do you want to be a clone of me?
No.
Not at all. Because I'm terrible, because I'm not good, because I'm not fantastic? No. Because he wants to be himself. He has some magic in his soul. He has some magic in his being, just like Ingeborg. She's got magic in her soul that wants to come out. And little by little, she sees it. But then she keeps putting it away because she doesn't really want to make the change. Now, why would anyone not want to make the change? Because to make the change means we're going to have to give up some old icons that we have. And these old icons are icons of, I have a right to be unhappy. I have a right to be angry. I have a right to be irritated by something. I have a right to be shook up. And nobody has a right. Nobody has any right to do anything. Anyone may do whatever they want, but it's not a right. You see, a right is something that you have earned and deserve. Well, you don't deserve and you haven't earned the right to be unhappy. You haven't earned the right to be sick, to live in an imperfect body. Because you are returning to your original purity and integrity. You are returning in your awareness to the divine self that you are. You're returning in awareness to the body that is a temple of the living spirit, whole and beautiful and perfect. And as you return to that awareness, what happens? The old has to go away. The old attitude you had about yourself, the old way you looked. Stand straight and tall. Be like a Marine, you know. Like yourself. What? Why do the Marines stand straight and tall? Can anyone tell me? The Marine Corps thinks that they are the best corps in the world. They think they're the best service that anyone can go into. They don't realize that I was in the Navy, and I know better. The Navy was the best corps you could go into. But everyone had esprit de corps. They had the belief in whatever they were doing. They believed that what organization they were in was the finest and the best. And this is what we should do. Now, is our body the temple of the living God? Then let's intuitively listen to that thought for ourselves. And when we intuitively listen to that thought for ourselves, that our body is a temple of the living God, what's going to happen to us? We're going to stand tall. We're going to give our lungs room to expand, and our lungs room to move, our heart an opportunity to beat. If you ever have a pain somewhere in your chest near your heart, you say, oh, I might have a heart attack. Don't ever do that. Just say, I need some baking soda. Don't empower anything. Don't empower even the baking soda. Because you don't have gas on your stomach. You don't have, you could, but you don't need it. Just say, I am in balance right now. I am balanced right now. My body is balanced. Everything works in perfect order. Why is it that when some people eat beans, they have gas? Why do some people do that and other people don't? Well, the chemical composition of some people is different than others. Their internal It is not. Everybody's got the same digestive system. Everybody has the same chemicals being produced by the same glands and the same system within their body as anybody else. Why do they have gas? Because this is what they've been told. This is what they've been told. And one time it happened, and they said, yep, there it is. And you name it, and you claim it. Let's put our intuitive imagination to work on something far better than limitation. Let's put our intuitive imagination to work on things that are going to be loving and beneficial to us, that are going to be uplifting to us. Let's sow seeds of intuitive awareness that will reap an eternal harvest that we will delight in. It's our choice. It's our choice of however we want to do it. What sort of seeds do you want to plant inside of yourself? What sort of affirmations are you using? Now, I see John sitting on the exercycle out there, and he takes out the list of affirmations, and he reads them while he exercycles. And he's writing in place, and he's reading these affirmations, and singing these affirmations, and talking these affirmations to himself. Now, what's going to happen to him? Are those affirmations instantly going to be his lifestyle? Let me say this to you. They already are his lifestyle. All he is doing is reaffirming them. All he is doing is awakening himself to the fact that they're already there. How many of you sit on the exercycle and read the affirmation? Oh, I used to do that, but, you know, I've read them all a number of times. You never can read them too many times. Never. Never at all. We have Stefan, might as well say his name. We have Stefan. He went to Europe, and he wants to have credit for the work that he has done here at the monastery, that he has been the president and CEO and stuff like that for a long period of time, so that he can go out and look for another job. And he wants to have an affirmation that he has done that. Well, now, that's good. That's good. But do you think anybody is going to hire him because he was the president of a university, and because he was president of a number of corporations, and because he was a CEO? Why is anyone going to hire Stefan? Because he believes he can do the job they want done. He believes it. They're going to hire him because they have a confidence in him that he has given to them, the confidence of himself. People come into my life and say, oh, come to work for us, come to work for us, have this position, have that position. I say, no thanks. Why do they come to me? Because they know that I have done this or that or the other thing? No, because of the way I present myself, of the way I believe in myself, the way I conduct myself. Wherever I go, people are warm and wonderful and friendly, because that's the way I am. And any job that I ever get, I can have as long as I want it. I can do everything on it as long as I want it, because I believe in myself. So, sowing seeds of intuitive awareness about yourself reaps an eternal harvest. Reading these affirmations keeps our mind firm on what we believe, keeps our heart firm on what we believe, keeps us in tune with what we believe. Now, what sort of affirmations are you affirming? John is taking them at random. What are you doing? Sylvia has them all on her file in her computer. Now, how often does she pull them out and look at them? How often does Sylvia really sit down and read the affirmations? Now, Sylvia had free time yesterday, and I said to her, what have you done? And she said, well, I caught up on my reading. I read the magazines I had that I wanted to read, and I read this and that and the other thing. Now, that's good. That's good. But better if Sylvia had spent that same amount of time saying, I like me, 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 I like me. What would have happened to Sylvia if she had spent that same amount of time doing that? I'm not saying you shouldn't read magazines. I'm not saying you shouldn't do these things. I'm just saying, how much time do you dedicate to the affirmations of truth about yourself? How much time do you really do this? You may do it once or twice while you're walking the path, but then your mind goes drifting off onto all sorts of imaginative schemes and ideas. And when it does, you're not taking advantage of that affirmation. I'm not saying you should 100% of the time, 24 hours a day, say, I like me. I am saying 36 hours a day, you should say, I like me. 36 hours of a 24-hour day, you should say, I like me. Your statement, I like me, should be so much a part of you, so much in your vision. You see a sign and it says, Bock beer, and you read it, I like me. You see the seagulls flowing in the sky, and you see them making a pattern, I like me. You look at your screensaver on your TV, on your monitor, and it says, I like me. You look at another person, and in their eyes you read, I like me. You see? You say, well, Herb, what is it? You're not living if you're doing that all the time. I say to you, I'm past my time too, I say to you, you're living more when you say, I like me. Every moment of your life and liking yourself. To say I like me means you do things that like you. Do you brush your teeth properly? Or do you just give them a lick and a promise? Stefan will teach you how to brush your teeth properly. He loves to brush his teeth. Do you wash your face properly? Do you gently massage your scalp every day? Do you take your body every night when you go to bed and give it a fluff massage where you don't really touch it, you just sort of go over it and do an energy massage on your entire body every night? Do you do that? When you get up in the morning, do you bound out of bed with joy in your heart and anticipation for the day, saying, I like me, I like me? Everyone you meet, do you say, I like me, and thereby liking them, your creation? Everything you do you say, I like me? This inspires intuitive awareness within you to know and to do things that you never dreamed you could do, and it reaps an eternal harvest. Are you ready for it? I'm ready to stand by you as you do it. I'm ready to have you do virtually nothing here on campus except say, I like me. And if you really did that, if you really did that with all your heart and all your soul and all your being, you'd probably be here 10 minutes and then you go off to live your life. But we don't. We don't. We're training ourselves to do that. We're training ourselves to be aware of it. Well, train yourself. Because when that moment comes, you're going to be the happiest person in the universe. And you'll like yourself, and you do whatever it is that comes naturally. I love you. You guys are great. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.